Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, December 28th, 2013. This is episode 1043. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about technology. Yes, sorry. I apologize in advance. Computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, joins us at 33 and a third after the hour to talk about that. And all of that jazz. This is the last weekend of 2013. After all, we are headed into a brand new year. And I know Time magazine decided that the person of the year was Pope Benedict, and a good choice, I'm sure, for, he is the leader of millions of Catholics, hundreds of millions of Catholics. But I have to say, and maybe it's my own provincial focus, that if I were going to nominate the subject, the story, the person of the year this year, it would have to be privacy. It would have to be the revelations that came this year that the National Security Agency was gathering up every one of our phone records, or as best they could, to just store them for later use, just in case anything came up they wanted to get us for. Kind of reminds me of the idea of pre-crime and Minority Report, right? The telepathic people and the little goo would sense a crime about to happen, would arrest you before it happened. The kind of what the NSA was doing, right, is they're collecting all our phone records. One judge has ruled that illegal. Now another judge has ruled it legal. It's confusing. Whether it's legal or not, it's certainly wrong. And just because they can doesn't mean they should. So this, to me, this was the year privacy became the big story. And not just with government, although a lot of it with government, but also with companies like Facebook and Google. Apple stood up and said, hey, we're going to protect our users' privacy. Microsoft started pointing fingers at Google saying, then you're taking your privacy. And of course, we found out that neither was Microsoft. This was the year that the eight big tech companies took out a full page ad in the Wall Street Journal saying, stop spying on us, U.S. government. They went to see President Obama ostensibly to talk about the Obamacare, but instead said, stop spying on us, President Obama. And yet, I have to say that in some ways giving up our privacy can be a good thing. Today I got from Google, I got my little movie. Google made me a movie. See, I've been, for a long time, I've been using Google Plus, which is their social network to store my photos. Whenever I take a picture on my iPhone or my Android phone, I have it automatically upload to Google Plus. And, they're private. But Google Plus has been... unbeknownst to me, collecting all those pictures and made a little movie, my 2013, the year 2013. Now, everything here is private, and I have to say, I feel like it's safe because it was all done with a machine. I don't feel like any human got involved in making this movie for me. But I thought this was a great thing to have, that this was done automatically for me and showed up in my timeline. It has some music. I'll play it has a little music on it. And it has pictures from my year. And I think algorithm, the computer algorithm that did this, took pictures where there were people, or I was huddled close to somebody, figuring, well, that must be an important person. So it really is a great record of what happened in the year. Shows my son graduating from high school. Because I shot a video with that on my camera, right?
It didn't include that weird selfie you took in the bathroom mirror?
None of those. I don't know. I think there's an algorithm that says no selfies. But there are pictures of me that other people took that were, tagged with my face. So this is a wonderful memory of 2013 that was automatically generated.
Shut up.
I think I like Chad, my producer, an awful lot because he shows up in all these. You don't, Heather, but you can't control it,
yet.
Right? It's yet.
I'll be there
next year. I thought, I went to the Super Bowl this year, no pictures from the Super Bowl. But nevertheless, it's a great document. Now, the only way they could do this was a horrendous invasion of my privacy, right? That's the only way they could make that movie. Here's my point. There are there's value to having your privacy invaded. But if you ask me, and I would submit this to you, and you can tell me, 8888, ask Leo if you think I'm on the right track. There should be two things that go along with this. First, right up front, before you sign up for any service, Facebook, Google, anybody, they're in very clear English, in short sentences, not 18 pages of a terms of service, but really say, look, you need to hear this about our privacy. Here's what we're going to collect about you. And this should be up front. You should have to opt into this. In order to use our service, we will be collecting information about X, Y, and Z, where you live, who you hang out with, all this stuff. What they're going to do with it in order to, in the case of Google, pick ads that are you're interested in. That's Google's business. They're an ad agency, basically. And they use the information by giving us a lot of stuff, the information they gather, using Google services, they then use to target ads at us. So they need to say that very upfront. And there needs to be a box that says, yes, I'm in. By the way, Google is doing this. Facebook does not do this. That's one. So you and I guess associated with that is that any time you should be able to opt out of that. Right? So upfront, they need to let you know they're doing it and ask your permission and tell and be very clear about what they're doing with it. If they do that, then part two is, in return, they have to say, here's what we're going to give you. Now, this may not be explicit. I think with the case of Google, there's so much that, you know, we give you the ability to use YouTube for free. Upload any video you want, distribute it to any of the billions of people in the world who can see it free. Trust me, I spend money distributing video for a living, you know, from our podcast network. This is a hugely expensive endeavor. And they give it to you for free. Facebook, same thing. We will let you connect with your classmates, your friends, post pictures, post videos, share them with everybody for free. That's the second clause. Here's what you're going to get. And I think that can be less explicit. That could be just watch over time and see if you get any value out of that. In case of Google, we'll make a movie at the end of every year that shows your highlights of your year, whatever that is. Then the most important thing is you and I have the very explicit choice. This is what we're going to give up, and this is what we're going to get. And then we can make that choice. And I don't want to make that choice for you. If you say, hey, I don't want them to have all this information, then you can opt out. Don't use the service. Or if the service is really generous, use the service, but say, don't collect any information on me. You know, that's how they make money. So there's no requirement that they give this to you stuff for free, right? But you make that choice. I don't want government to make that choice for me. I think that, you know, in the European Union, for instance, lots of laws about what Google can and cannot do. You know what? If I'm making that choice, this is what the law should say. You've got to be honest and explicit about what information you're collecting. You've got to give the people a chance to opt in or opt out. And then you have to give them value in return. And then you and I will decide, are we getting paid enough for our information? I think when we use Facebook, we know, right? Facebook's collecting every bit of information we give it. Who we're in relationship with, who we have friends with, who we're married to, what we buy, what we like. They collect all that stuff. And then in return, you get Facebook for free. You have to decide. Increasingly, I'm less interested in Facebook. I think that's the other thing that's going to happen that we'll look back at 2013 and say, this was the year, I'm not saying Facebook's going away, but this was the year Facebook kind of took a wrong turn, I think. And Google took a very right turn. Now, people are going to say, oh, Leo, you're a Google fanboy. Well, I'm just giving you my opinion about the two different companies and how they're handling this. Google's been very explicit about what they collect. They've tried very hard, as have everybody, but maybe not quite as hard, to not give that information to governments. And I don't just mean our government. I mean, you know, every government in the world is collecting this information as best they can. Google has started it with a transparency report. They were the first to do this, saying, here's what governments all over the world have asked us for. Here's what we have given them to the degree the laws allow them to disclose that information. In the U.S., they're not allowed to disclose very much. Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, they've all followed suit since then, but Google started it. I think Google did it the right way, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think I get a lot of value from Google. Google Docs, YouTube, these videos, Google Plus, the auto awesome stuff that they could do with photos. To me, there's value there, and I'm willing to give Google my photos because I get that value. You should be able to make that choice. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think Facebook has jumped the shark. I think Facebook's over.
Hey, let's face it. We're all trying.
At least I notice I have no. In fact, I did not install Facebook when I redid my my Moto X, which I do periodically. It seems to need that every once in a while. Fortunately, it takes an hour to do it. Just it reinstalls all the apps and everything. But I did not put Facebook on this time. And I don't miss it. I don't miss it. So I think Facebook is kind of over. I think, you know, what they did with Facebook this year was try to become more like Twitter. They tried to make the news feed on Facebook. They shape it. So in my opinion, I should see on my news feed everybody I follow and everything they post. And then I maybe should have some controls to say, hey, this person, I don't want to see so much. But that's not how it works. Facebook doesn't tell you how it works. What they've done recently is steer the news feed more towards actual news. They want to be like Twitter. They want to be a news place where you learn about not your friends, but about news. And I don't know if this is really what I want to learn. You know? So, also, they've jumped up the ads quite a bit. I'm just feeling like Facebook has kind of tuned it to the wrong way. Now, I was asking my daughter and my son, and they use it a lot still. My daughter especially. It's interesting. My daughter, 21, uses it. All her friends use it, like, seriously. My son, 18, a few years behind her, Snapchat, Instagram, much more. Facebook, much less. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Happy holidays to you. We're going into 2014. Brand new year. I noticed a number of articles from tech pundits who, you know, I no longer, I have to say, it's very disappointing to me. The tech media and media in general is so focused on getting clicks that it feels like every article I read, even for prestigious journals like the Wall Street Journal and Forbes and Fortune and Time Magazine, every one of them, at least online, is cultivated to get you the headline, and the story is cultivated to get you to click. It's basically sweeps week all year long. And it's depressing because I'm looking for real news, and all you see is stuff that's, you know, designed to get you to click it. So naturally, a number of tech pundits wrote articles saying 2013 was the year of no innovation. Nothing happened. What a depressing year. I don't feel that way somehow. It feels like there was some interesting stuff this year. Think Apple's iPads, the mini with the Retina display in the Air. Very cool and innovative. Admittedly, an evolution on something they released in 2010, but a great innovation. I think the cell phone industry knocked 100 home runs. The Lumia 1020 from Nokia, which admittedly, you know, was early this year. It was announced the year before. But still, this was the year of the 1020. A camera phone that's better than your camera. The Moto X from Motorola, the phone I fell in love with. A lot of people I know have fallen in love with, but just because it's simple and clean and easy to use. There's good stuff. There's good stuff. The Mac Pro, the new Mac Pro came out this year. That's a beauty. And on the web, there was some, you know, lots of very interesting innovation. So it feels like link bait. You know that word, link bait, is like you're a fish and they're dropping their articles hoping that you'll get hooked and click it. And so then that way they make money out of it. Rumble, grumble. Heather Hummon, our phone ranger, is here. Do you feel like this was a good year, 2013? I know the economy was in the dumps. That's bad.
Good year for me.
You started working for me. Exactly. That's a good thing. I know we pay you $4 an hour, but hey, you got a job. Underemployed is better than unemployed.
Yeah, and I get to go, hey, Mom, I'm on a webcast.
No, we're thrilled. This was a good year for me in many, many ways, but yeah. So do you think from the point of view of technology, did it feel to you as a normal person that what we saw was a lot of junk, or was it innovative?
I'm gonna go with innovative if I have to pick one.
Well, you know, it could be mildly innovative.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm trying to remember good who changes. Wrote this article saying, yeah, rumble.
Well, and I went from a brick of a laptop to something really sleek.
There you go. You got a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And I mean, admittedly, this is a design.
I love the updates on the iPhone.
iPhone. Yeah, you have fingerprint reader on the iPhone. That's not insignificant.
That is not insignificant.
Yeah.
No one has tried to steal my new device.
Admittedly, a lot of what we see are shiny goods produced in China and designed to be thrown away in a year or two. I mean, there's a lot of that. And we have to. That's one of the things we do on this show, I think, is we try to cut through that and say, you know, this is a gadget. This is not useful. I never was interested in gadgets. When the gadget thing began a few years ago, people said, oh, you could be a gadget guy. I don't want to be a gadget guy. I used to go on Live with Regis and Kelly and show gadgets. And it felt demeaning. I don't like gadgets. Gadgets are things that, you know, they're toys that you throw away after.
I'm picturing the remote control car.
Yes. I think that technology has so much promise, can change your life. And I'm much more interested in technology that makes a big difference in your life. The fact that you can carry in your pocket something that is not only a better computer than you had a few years ago, but it's always on the internet and has a camera, in many cases a very good camera attached to it. That's a life changer. That's not a gadget. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
To be at the last game at the stick and shoot out to all your friends,
well, that
picture
was cool.
Of yourself tailgating.
Did you see that?
Did you
see?
It was amazing.
You were there. I saw your pictures.
Yeah.
We didn't see each other at Candlestick Park. It was
but
the last game of the regular season.
Online.
But we saw each other. I knew you were and
Kim
were there. and you saw me and Lisa. And we were. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now that said, the new park I hope has much better Wi-Fi.
It has very good. I'm told. Levi's Park, which is down Levi's Stadium, which is down in. In Silicon Valley, better have good Wi-Fi. No,
exactly.
I'm told that it's going to have very good Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Because their luxury suites are already, they sold out like that to Google, Apple, et cetera, is what I've heard.
This was a big year for Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft announced a new version of Windows, which was resoundingly rejected by the public. So much so that their first computer, Microsoft has never made a computer before. This was the year they made their first computer. Well, they released it in 2012. But this was the year of the Surface, that they took a $900 million loss on the Surface RT, saying, we made too many of them. Whoops.
Cringe.
And it cost their CEO, Steve Ballmer, his job. That's a big story. That's a big story. Microsoft struggled desperately to get Windows 8 and then 8.1 to be something people wanted. It was kind of a failure. Meanwhile, pointing the finger at Google, saying, you're scroogling you. Who should I talk to first? Let's go to the phones. I want to talk to people.
Let's talk to Chris in Lakewood, California, because Santa didn't bring him this item, and he needs your help.
I bet there are a few of you out there who say, I really wanted something, and you didn't get it. Chris, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi. Hey, Chris. Welcome. Chris, I hear noise. Chris, pick up the phone. Oh, it's only a 3-hour show. I really have to put him on hold, but I won't hang up on him. I don't know how to put him on hold. Do I do this? Do I do that? What do I do?
This was like the... Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's one way to get rid of him. Hi, Dwayne in Sun City, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well, Dwayne. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, sir. My question to you is, I've got... 20,000 songs on iTunes, and I've spent hundreds of hours downloading. I collect bootlegs and whatnot, and I'm currently with Carbonite, but I don't know that Carbonite would be the best place to store my 20,000 songs.
It's probably not, because how many gigabytes is that?
I have no idea. A lot. It's between 80 and 100.
Yeah, so Carbonite is online storage, and this is true not just of Carbonite, but any online thing. In order for it to work, you have to upload it. And if you do the math, obviously it's not going to use all your bandwidth. It's going to use a tiny fraction of your upstream bandwidth. Otherwise, it would knock you off the internet. You wouldn't be able to use anything else. So you do the math, you're going to realize that gigabytes would take days, weeks, months, probably years, if it's many gigabytes, to upload. So that's not practicable.
Exactly.
So,
and this is my legacy.
Yeah, yeah. So. And these are not things you bought on iTunes. You're collecting, and we should explain, bootlegs does not mean pirates. pirated music. It means concert recordings that were not necessarily approved. Sometimes they were with Grateful Dead.
Well, the stuff Dead, like that. Authorized every bit of music.
Yeah, they said that's fine. Hang on a bit. I'm going to talk about what to do when you have a lot of data. What to do when you have a lot of data to back it up. We'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He could do it for free with Google Music or Amazon, right? Not Amazon. I guess they charge you for storage, but Google will let you do 25,000. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we were talking to Dwayne in Sun City about backing up his fabulous bootlegs and other music collection. And your legacy and doing the math, backing it up online, if you have 100 gigs, would take 3 months. Optimistically. So it's not practical. But
so you think just one of those...
Here's the beauty of it. A hard drive, you could back it all up on a USB thumb drive in about, an hour. So, or less. So that's what I would do. The key is off-site, right? The key is to have more than one copy. I would say 3 copies.
Yeah, I've heard you say that numerous times, yeah. And that's what I'm headed for. That's ultimately what I want to do.
Go down to the big box store, buy a cheap hard drive, a terabyte hard drive, back it up. Now, here's one more thing I would add. Google offers free backup of up to 20,000 songs.
Oh, really?
Now, this is going to take a long time because you are uploading. In the case, if it's something that they sell, they just match it and they say, okay. But bootlegs, they don't sell. So anything that's unusual that you have that's not available on the Google Play Store, they'll have to upload. But they will do that for you for free, up to 20,000 songs.
Oh well, then that's
so have don't do that only. Have a hard, buy a hard drive, buy a USB key, download the Google Music plugin, and let that run, and it will continue to run probably for months. But at least you'll be backing up, and then that way you will have a fairly decent solution. Might be a good idea to take one of the two extra, two physical backups to work or somewhere offsite.
Right. Leo, you're the best. I love your show.
Thanks for listening.
You're the best. Happiest New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you so much. Very kind of you.
Thank you, dude. Thank
I wish I could hear all that music. It's mostly Dead?
No, it's mostly Rolling Stones, and I'm from the 60s, so...
Me too.
And it's very diverse. Everything from Thin Lizzy to you name it. I live in a very small tunnel of music from the 60s and the 70s. After the 70s, I kind of gave up and just stuck with my own
But you
music.
Have an historic archive, so I do want you to save that. I talk to friends. I have friends.
Yeah, no, I agree. I still physically have the CDs themselves, but I want to, my iTunes, like I say, it's 20,000 songs. So
yeah.
It's
you want to save that.
Collection.
Yeah, and for a historic point of view, right now it's copyrighted. You can't put it on the internet, although I would still do it, but publicly. But ultimately, historically, that stuff's very important. And I don't think the bands necessarily are doing a very good job. Even the Dead, who have a huge archive, a vault, have not really done it. In fact, I know the guy who's their archivist, have not done a great job of disseminating that stuff. They do a little bit at a time once in a while. There's great stuff. And I have friends who are rock DJs who've interviewed everybody from Janis Joplin to Jimi Hendrix. And those great interviews are on reel-to-reel tape. I've mentioned this before. I'm begging them. I tell them, I will do it for you. Get those things digitized and put them online because that's an historic record. Of a time and people will never come back, and you've got to preserve it and, better yet, publish it. And the internet makes that possible. And that's really valuable. Hey, good to talk to you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, Dwayne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, who's here? It's our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. Ooh. Scott, I have a question, a caller with a question for you. Would you mind if we take it?
Absolutely.
Let's say go. Hi. Yeah, let's say hi to Robert in Upland, California. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, hi. Wow, great to talk to both Leo and Scott there. It's amazing.
You've got a home theater guru on the line and then a home theater dunderhead.
Well, yeah, my question is, whenever I go to the movies, to a theater, I always experience something that perplexes me. And I don't know if it's just me or if it's really something that is really there. And my question is, it seems like when the music and the sound effects are going, it's a nice loud volume. But when somebody starts to speak and to talk, you really got to pay attention. It seems like it's a lot more quieter.
Wow. It's a center channel problem.
It drives me crazy. And I just got a new Blu-ray player.
Hold on. Before you go any further, Do you have a 5.1 surround sound system, a multi-speaker system?
It's a stereo. Yeah, two channels.
Left and right. All right, Scott, take away, Blue Jay. I think Scott can help you. We have the same problem. In fact, my AV receiver, you can, of course, boost the center channel. And I have a hard time when the center channel is 0 dB, when it's normal, hearing dialogue, maybe because I'm getting old. Unfortunately, you can boost the center channel. Now, I have a 5.1 surround sound, so I have a center channel speaker. What do you do if it's a stereo,
well,
Scott?
This is the problem between movies and recorded music. Recorded music has a very limited dynamic range. They compress it in order so that you can hear everything while you're driving in your car or running, you know, with little earbuds in or whatever. But movies have a very wide dynamic range. So the explosions are very loud, but the quiet parts are very quiet, which makes it difficult for me when I want to wear earplugs for the loud parts. I can't hear the dialogue, so I understand exactly what you're saying. In the movie theater, there's nothing you can do. In the home, you can. Most receivers have something called midnight mode or something like that, which compresses the dynamic range so that you can hear everything more clearly at a given volume level. So if you're having trouble hearing the dialogue and you don't have a center channel, which Leo made a great point there to increase the level of the center channel if you can't hear the dialogue very well, is to engage this midnight mode or dynamic compression mode in your receiver, which will allow you to hear everything at a more constant level.
I wish I'd known about that when I was living in an apartment. It was very frustrating. I watched The Dark Knight, for instance. Huge explosions. And then Batman would talk like this or Batman would talk like this. And so I'd have to turn it up when Batman was speaking so I could hear what the heck he was saying. And then, of course, something blows up and my poor neighbors, eventually they complain because it would be boom!
Yeah, and, yep, exactly yeah. Right.
So midnight mode. That's for late night listening.
It's viewing. For late night listening when yeah. you can turn it down.
Perfect. Now of course Scott's Skype has frozen in mid thought, but that's good. We got the point, which was look for a setting on your AV receiver that lets you handle this dynamic range. If you've got a 5.1 system or a 7.1 system, if you've got multiple speakers and you have a center channel, that's why they have a center channel speaker in these surround sound systems, because dialogue comes and is mixed by the editors who make the movie, is mixed it to the center channel, because that's you want your ears to detect the sound coming out of the character's mouth on the screen, as opposed to the left of the screen, the right of the screen, to the back of your head, and so forth. So if you have that, if you have a center channel speaker, by the way, highly recommended if you're watching movies, get a 5.1 system or at least a 3.1 system, left, right, center, and a subwoofer. Your AV receiver and sometimes your TV and other devices, your Blu-ray, will have this setting that says, hey, can you nudge the center channel up a little bit? I do that about 2 dB, and I can understand the dialogue better. I could keep the level a little lower so that the explosions don't rock the neighborhood, and that works pretty well. I think we've lost Scott, unfortunately, but let me tell you where you can find him. We haven't lost him permanently. He hangs out at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. He's the editor-in-chief there of their content. Great place. Everybody who's into home theater should visit and become a member of the AVS Forum. He also does a podcast for us. I call them netcasts, because who has an iPod? I mean, come on. It's called Home Theater Geeks. You can catch it every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. Or subscribe, twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Saturday, 8888, Ask Leo, that's the phone number. We're kind of coming to the end of 2013. You know what next week will be, Heather Hammond?
What? Aside from New Year's?
It will be the 10th anniversary of the tech guy. January 4th, 2004, I was anointed by Robin Bertolucci, the program director at KFI Radio. I was anointed the tech guy. And actually, I've been doing this kind of call-in radio for twice that time since the early 90s. But I became the tech guy on the 50,000-watt blowtorch at KFI. 3 years later, we syndicated it. We're now on 200 stations nationwide. But this is the soon-to-be. We're completing the ninth year and about to begin the 10th year as the tech guy.
We got to get Robin to call in.
I'm sending her flowers. Are you kidding?
Yeah, right.
I owe her big time.
Oh, my God.
So that's exciting. In fact, the first tech guy show was from the... Now, here's an interesting story. It was from, I'm going to call it, the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, in Las Vegas. I've been told that the CES folks no longer want you to say that CES stands for the Consumer Electronics Show. We're supposed to just call it International CES. There's a problem. What the heck does that mean? No one knows. So the reason I always say the Consumer Electronics Show is, you understand, it's a trade show for consumer electronics. But they've decided in their infinite stupidity that the acronym is sufficient. That it stands for nothing.
It's like they're hiding something.
Well, maybe they don't want to be, I don't know, branded consumer electronics. I don't know, but I'm sorry. Well, first of all, it's not binding. I can call anything I want. If I want to call it the Doodoo Head Show, I could. But there's no legal requirement that I call it International CES. They just would. They're lawyers, though. We'll send you a letter saying, we'd prefer that you not mention this consumer electronics word. What are you talking about? How can I explain? Everybody knows CES. No. I'm sorry. Everybody does not know what CES stands for.
And consumer electronics is all-encompassing, is it not?
I think it's sufficient. Anyway. That's where we started. I am not going to CES this year. This is a measure, by the way, of one's stature in the technology industry. If you are a lowly grunt, you have to go. If you don't, you send people.
Are you sending me?
I'm sending people. No, you're not going. You're staying right next to me. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's crazy. It's too big. It's huge. It's exhausting. I have a number of reporters going down. I'm sending a priest, a guy in a bow tie, and the Gizwiz. They're going. Father Robert Ballaser, our digital Jesuit, is going. We're sending Karsten, our producer, Karsten Bondi, with him. And the Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, will be down there. Perfect. We're going to have plenty of coverage, believe me. In fact, what I've decided is that there are only maybe 10 or 15 products that matter at CES. Oh, who else? Scott Wilkinson will be down there. What we're going to charge our reporters to do is find the best, say, 10 or 20 products. No more than 20. And we'll talk about them, and that's it. And then we'll go home. Because the rest is like iPad cases, plastic chickens you can put a key in and put outside your door. It's stupid stuff. So I've got smart people down there. Scott's going to pick the best TVs. We'll talk about the TVs because that's usually the biggest story down there.
I'm going to go anyway just because I want to party with the Gizwiz.
Partying with the Gizwiz in Vegas is something special, I must admit. So that's coming up in about a week, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do it so early in the year. People are just recovering. Anyway, our 10th anniversary will be next week. And you know how I know this. My chat moderator, we have a wonderful chat room, which has been going since day one. Our wonderful chat moderator, Dan Hendricks, sent me an email saying, you know, this is my 10th anniversary, too, because he started moderating our chat room on January 4th, 2004. So, happy anniversary, everybody. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. Lily is on the line from Oceanside, California. Hi, Lily. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hi, Leo. Really a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure
How are
talking
you?
To you. Oh, I'm great.
Oh, great.
Happy New Year. What can I do for you?
Happy New Year, and you can also say happy birthday. My birthday's tomorrow.
Happy birthday. That's wonderful. You know, my mom's birthday is January 2nd. You guys, you got the short end of the stick.
We definitely terrible, do.
Terrible.
Yeah. Happy birthday. One gift.
One gift. Here's your birthday, Christmas. It's all rolled into one.
You got it.
Well,
anyway,
happy birthday.
Well, thank you. the question I have, I've got the Samsung Galaxy Note 3. That's what you have, isn't it?
Or yes.
I
bought a Galaxy Note 3 because I wanted that big screen, and I love the screen.
I love the screen. There is a learning curve, even though I came from a smartphone before. But
yeah, the real problem, I think, is Samsung has just larded it up with all sorts of Samsung stuff. That kind of, to me, gets in the way. But however, I love the stylus. I love the big screen. It's got a wonderful camera.
Wonderful camera is right. I mean, that's a quality camera on it.
Yeah.
One of the features I don't like is the voice.
Because the Samsung, this drives me nuts. So Samsung puts its S voice on there because we're Samsung. We're better. I want to use Google Voice. It's 20 times better. I don't want Samsung. And unfortunately, the Samsung voice pops up all the time.
It does, and she doesn't, and it's obviously from where it's made, so it's got an accent to it, which is hard to recognize.
Your S voice sounds Korean to you?
Yes.
Oh, how funny. I didn't notice that, but maybe there's a setting you could change to make it sound less...
I hope so. Boy, if there is, I'd love to know about it, because and she honestly doesn't recognize you. You can just tell.
It's terrible. Well, make sure. Okay, so there is there's a language and input set. And this is another thing Samsung does. When you go to the settings, the normal Android settings are a long page, admittedly, but one page of all the settings. They've divided it up into four different groups and completely arbitrarily assigned different settings to different groups. So I'm always searching through all the groups for the settings. But their language and input group, which I'm not sure where it is, but it's in one of those four pages of settings. That will allow you to make sure you choose U.S. English as your default language. And then it should understand you as best it can. But I admit, Google does a better job than Samsung does. Samsung licensed this from another... I think they've licensed it from Nuance. I'm not sure. But it's just not very good. And I would rather use Google. Now, you can use Google... But it's not quite as easy. There's the Google search bar at the top of every screen there. If you tap the microphone icon on that, that will launch Google's voice recognition. And that's much, much better. I always use that. The problem is Samsung hardwires their recognition, their S voice, to the home button. So you double tap the home button, S voice launches every time, and it drives me nuts.
Exactly.
Plus, if you say something that sounds even vaguely like, okay, Samsung... which apparently is every other word out of my mouth, S-Voice launches then. So every time I unlock my Galaxy Note 3, S-Voice is running. And it's like, go away, stop.
Yeah, and again, it's not even close on something. I'll say, like, call AIM-like, and I'll say, oh, call Angela. I mean, it's not even close.
Well, but that's another problem. That's another problem that is true of all voice recognition is it's doing the best it can. It should do pretty well when it's looking in a phone book. But for instance, my girlfriend's last name is Kensel, which sounds just like cancel. Uh-huh. I cannot call her. If I say her last name, it cancels it. Every time.
Oh, I know.
So but that's true of everything. I mean, it's very frustrating. So there's some words and some names it just doesn't get. I can't call my mom for some reason. It doesn't like Mary.
Yeah, and it's the same with me. It's names that aren't even close. I mean, I can
know.
Just like Jerry or Jeffrey, but I guess a question I'm calling about.
But let me just say this.
Oh, go ahead.
It's amazing that it can even recognize it a little bit, and it's not perfect yet. And that technology promises a lot. Sometimes it doesn't deliver, and voice recognition is a hard thing to do. So it's doing the best it can. Okay, go ahead, Lily. I'm sorry. What's your real question?
I totally agree with you. But what I want to know, I'm a realtor, and I go back and forth between Palm Desert and Oceanside. I need to have a good Bluetooth. I've tried Motorola. That was okay. I just tried the Plantronics, and it's not working out for me. It's because for a couple of reasons. What do you recommend for – and I don't think I'm – I don't want anything super bulky or with that tube thing in front of your mouth.
I have to say that wired is always better than Bluetooth. If you really don't want a wire, I'll recommend some wireless. But if you got a wired headset, it would be infinitely better. Because Bluetooth, the problem with Bluetooth is it's kind of inconsistent. It can drop out. But I will tell you the best Bluetooths. But if you can use wired, I would use wired. If you can't use...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I can't, but, especially, a girl with her hair and stuff. So you just
and the other thing is, your next car, you're a realtor. You got to have a nice vehicle. Your next car should have Bluetooth in it, and then you don't have to worry about this.
Oh, I've got it. I've got the Ford Edge, and guess what? That's a whole other story. Ford Edge on that sync your ride.
Ford Sync isn't working for you?
And no, it's not. They've only had 5 million different updates that they send out about every 6 months. Seriously, and at each time it's a little better, but.
You know, I think it's the MyFord Touch.
MyFord Touch.
Yeah, the sync, which I had in my must. Oh, we're out of time. Hang on, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk some more in a sec. Silly clock. Why? I'm having a nice conversation and the clock runs out. All right, we'll finish that conversation. Yeah, I was going to recommend the Jawbone. And the Blue Ant. Those are the two that I really like. There's the trucker's headset, but she didn't want a big, she didn't want a silly headpiece thing. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, cell phones, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. The website, I always forget to mention this, and I apologize. It's really all you need to know is techguylabs.com. Tech Guy, that's me, Labs, that's where we do our little, you know, experiments.com. If you go there, you'll see the phone number, you'll see a link to our chat room, and questions and answers from previous shows, audio and video from them, too. And if I mention something, you know, on the show, there'll be a link there. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who's writing everything down as I speak in real time. Josh Windisch, who then kind of adds the audio and the video, chops it up, picks a question of the week and all of that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. Do remember that if you don't remember anything else. You can even figure out when the show's on if you go there. Now, we were talking before the break, we were talking to Lily. She's a realtor, does a lot of driving, and needs a good Bluetooth headset. Doesn't want wired, so it's got to be wireless. And you don't want a boom microphone. You want one that just sticks in your ear, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Because there is a very good one called the Boom at theboom.com. That's a very good noise-canceling headset, but it does have a boom mic. And if you kind of want to avoid that, the reason those work better, of course, is the microphone, instead of being up by your ear,
is
down by your mouth. Jawbone makes some very good ones. In fact, they really were the first to do premium Bluetooth headsets. Now, they've gotten more into the Jambox, the Bluetooth speakers. But they make excellent, excellent Bluetooth headsets. The Jawbone Era, the Jawbone HD, and the Icon. I would say the Icon is probably the one you want. $80, not bad. You can go up to a higher level at the Jawbone Era. That's $130. Those are list prices. You'll find them for less on Amazon.
Yeah.
So Jawbone is one. You've already tried Plantronics, which I like. But let me show you another one. This is an Australian company called Blue Ant. MyBlueAnt.com. I have the Q3, and it's very good. Very good quality. These are all just the one, like the ones you have, where they sit in your ear. The speaker is, you know, in your ear. The microphone is kind of right below that. The Q3 is nice because it's very smart. It has speech commands and so forth. For instance, it'll announce the caller.
Good.
Yeah. So I think you'll like this.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate those suggestions. Just real quickly, what we've touched on about the MyFord Touch and Sync My Ride that Ford has.
Yeah.
I have a 2011, and it had all the bells and whistles, and it's really never worked correctly. I mean, it'll do a few little things, but Ford keeps coming up with these, finally, some updates on it, you know, as I mentioned, every few months. And then it was really funny because when I first initially had the problem, so I contacted Ford. Ford blamed it on Verizon. Of course, I go to the Verizon store. Verizon blames it on Ford.
You know, I had a 2010 Mustang with Sync Alone, and Sync Alone worked beautifully. It was the best Bluetooth I'd ever had. But then Ford decided that they wanted to do their own interface, and they added my Ford Touch. And everybody agreed it was an abomination. They blew it.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing that they keep updating, trying to make the user interface acceptable. And it is. And I haven't tried it lately, but I remember how difficult it was to get working. So I was very happy with plain old Sync. And I don't, you know, I'm sure they'll fix it. These guys are very focused on technology, but I think that they've not, they had a lot of trouble with my Ford Touch.
So I'm sorry that that's not working, because that is the best way to do it. I mean, you get the best audio. You know, the only bad thing about that is there's no privacy. Anybody else in the car can hear the conversation. So, but a good Bluetooth headset should work well, too. And I would try this Blue Ant, the Q3. I think it's excellent. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I think we've lost her. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, moving on to... thank you, Lily. I appreciate it. Chris in Lakewood, California. You're next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. I have a question. I've been looking at speakers for my computer. I'm going to get some real good computer speakers, and I've got some real cheap Logitechs I paid for about 4 or 5 years ago, like $17, $18. But I'm ready to upgrade to some good quality speakers. I've been looking at the Bose, the Companion 2 speakers, and I've been looking at the Logitech, and I'm just wondering if I should go with it. Bose is supposed to be one of the best, but it doesn't have a subwoofer like the Logitech and some of the other brands have. What do you recommend for the best sound quality and music and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with computer speakers in general is they're tiny, right? I mean, you don't want big old speakers on your desk. You want smaller speakers. And it's just right. A fact of physics that a small speaker is not going to give you great bass. It can't move enough air. A subwoofer is a good solution because you put it under the desk. It doesn't occupy a lot of space if you've got somewhere to put it. And it will rumble your room if you get a good sub. So that's not a bad, you know, I would look at a three-way speaker system. If what you're saying is this is how I'm going to listen to music, then I would, in fact, get a three-piece system. A left-right speaker, those can be smaller because they're just doing the high-end, the tweeters. And then a subwoofer, which can be not, it doesn't have to be directional because low frequencies the ear cannot really pinpoint. And that could be under your desk. And you will get better results. I think Logitech is fine. I don't think they're the best. B&W makes excellent speakers. There are some very good solutions. I'm going to also give you a link in, and I'll put this in our show notes at techguylabs.com. The Mex guy has given me a link to CNET's review of the best PC speakers, and CNET's pretty good on those kinds of things. So they like, and I agree with them. And now these are powered speakers, and they're big. The audio engines. And I have these, and now if you get the fives, they're fairly large, but boy, the sound is superb. So the key on a computer speaker is that it be powered. The computer does not have an amplifier. So you either have to get an amplifier or a built-in amplifier. All the audio engines have built-in amplifiers, and they're very good. You can get the smaller audio engine twos. Now, these are expensive, $200 for a pair, but the quality, I think, is very accurate. They mention the Harman Kardon sound sticks. I don't like those particularly. B&W, excellent, because they, you know, Bowers & Wilkins is a very high-end speaker manufacturer, but you pay the price as well. And they also talk about the Logitechs. I think I agree with them that the audio engine is probably the best choice. I've been very happy with audio engines, and those do not need a subwoofer. You can get a subwoofer. So what you could probably do, what I would recommend doing, is get the audio engines. If you can afford the fives and you have space on the desk for them, get the fives. And if you then say, you know, I want more deep bass, you can add the audio engine subwoofer, which is quite a subwoofer. My son, I gave these to my son who's doing music on his computer. He's doing Logic. Which is Apple's music generating program. He's doing dubstep, which needs a great big bass, and he's been very happy with the audio engines and the subwoofer underneath.
So the audio engines, is that the name brand?
That is the name of the brand, Audio Engine.
Wow, yeah. Audio Engine.
I've used these for years. They're not small, $400 for a pair. They're bookshelf speakers. They're not typically considered computer speakers because they're big. But not that big. I mean, they're a foot and a half, maybe a foot. They're about a foot tall. But boy, they sound good.
You mentioned one more thing, Leo. On CNET, is there a website I can go and do a comparison?
Yes. In fact, it's. We'll put it in our Tech Guy Labs because it's a long URL. But CNET.com, CNET.com. If you search for CNET.com and you search for best computer speakers, you'll find that article right away. But as I said, we'll put it on techguylabs.com as well. And I would agree, Rich Brown and Justin Yu, the two reviewers who picked the audio engines as their top choice, I would agree with them. They are absolutely
even better
best.
Than Bose, huh?
I'm not a fan. A lot of Bose is controversial. I think some people really like the Bose sound. And if you do, if you're one of those people, yes. But it's not necessarily considered a high-end brand name anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, for, I guess, I'm sure you booted Web 1120, but for people, and, you know, this is not an illegitimate point of view that say, you know, the government needs to do this because this they're protecting us. And I agree. We gave them we frankly gave them the go-ahead after 9/11 with the Patriot Act and the declaration of President Bush and then later President Obama, this cannot happen again, never again. Well, the only way you can do never again is by spying on everybody. It is, in my opinion, unconstitutional. Now, one fallacy Web 1120 had, and it's an important thing to understand, is that, and this is, by the way, what the NSA said in that puff piece that 60 Minutes did, is that metadata, it's, you know, we're just looking at who calls whom. We're not even looking at your names. Metadata is very, nowadays, sufficient to pinpoint your name. There was a recent study where they took 100 anonymized bits of metadata, and they were able to, with simple tools, this isn't the NSA, this is university researchers, identify by name 91 of the 100. And the NSA can almost certainly, using the metadata, identify everybody. So and this is really kind of the issue, is metadata collection is probably as intrusive, if not more intrusive, than content collection. So it's misleading, and the NSA knows that. It's misleading for the NSA to say, all right, we're only collecting metadata. You shouldn't be worried. That they know perfectly well that metadata is really, in some ways, more useful than the content of the conversation. So the real issue is, and I think it's, the, in my opinion, the real issue is we need to have a public debate about this. I think that the position that, hey, we've asked them to protect us and this is what they need to do is a tenable position. I took that position in a recent This Week in Google about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I said, look, what the NSA is doing, because I wanted to make sure that that position was articulated. The NSA is doing what it was is instructed to do and what it's legally entitled to do. And it's what we've furthermore asked them to do to protect us. And that is a reasonable position. But I think the important point, and I think without Edward Snowden, we wouldn't be having this public debate, is that we need to know what they're doing and need to say as a society what we want them to do. And if what we say is, look, we want to give up our privacy because we want to be safe, that's fine. But we need to have that discussion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, last shows of 2013. Moving on to Virginia in Mission Viejo, our next caller. Hi, Virginia.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I've been such a fan for such a long time, but I have to tell you, I am like totally low-tech. I still have a flip phone and, you know, whatever.
That's fine. That's fine. We invite everyone to join
us. No, I know. And you've had so many nice little old ladies on in the last few weeks that were asking the exact questions I had, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm a little old man, so it's okay.
Well, whatever. In any case.
Not so
well, you're not supposed to say that. That's like a bad phrase. No, and it isn't that I was dismissing you. But here's the deal. I watch Netflix all the time. I got a Roku box that first came out.
Aren't they great?
And I have never been able to get it to communicate from my computer to my home theater. Well, it's not true. I can, but I have to totally disable all my security, right, which, you know, I forget how to do it every time. So it's just a major pain. So I mostly just watch my Netflix movies, my streaming ones, on my computer, which is a desktop. Heaven forbid I have a tablet. So in any case, my question is, I want to get a bigger monitor because right now I have a flat screen.
Well, let me ask you this, because Virginia, it sounds like what you'd like to do is sit in the living room with the big screen TV and the Roku box and watch movies.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Do you have the Roku? Well, maybe we can solve this. You won't have to buy anything. Do you have the Roku hooked up to your TV?
Well, yeah.
And the Roku hooked up to your TV is able to watch, for instance, Netflix, right?
But I have to disable, I have to go into the computer and change all my...
No. You shouldn't have to do that. I don't know why you're doing that. So wait a minute. So let's find out. We're going to find out more because I think we could fix this is what I'm saying.
Oh,
So just let me ask you some questions. So the Roku is currently hooked up to the television set, right?
Correct.
And when you go to that input, you can see the Roku logo and you can see all the channels and everything. That's all working, right? So what is the internet connection to the Roku? Where's that coming from?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Does the Roku hooked up by a wire to... Do you have? First of all, what's your internet connection? Cable modem, DSL?
We have... Greg, what do we have? How is our...
Who do you get your internet from? What company?
We get our... Cox.
Cox. So that's a cable.
We have the bundle thing. Yeah, I think it is a cable.
Okay. So you have a cable modem. And does the cable modem then go to a wireless router?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you have Wi-Fi in the house, right?
Yes.
So when you set up your Roku, did you set up your Roku to use Wi-Fi or did you connect it to the Cox cable box?
I have no idea. Okay.
So the computer, what the good news is the computer is not involved and shouldn't be involved. So somehow you've configured this to go through your computer, get it out of the system. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's just all you really need is your Roku needs to have internet access. Now, one thing you could do, and I would suggest do this, is get the latest Roku, the new Roku 3.
Okay, because this is one of the very first Rokus.
Yeah, and as I remember, it didn't have Wi-Fi. So if you get the new Roku from RokuLabs.com, and it's $99.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right now you can save $10 on it because they have a holiday special. So it's $89 for the latest Roku, the Roku 3. It will hook. Now, do you have an HD TV?
We have a Gateway, big flat panel. It was one of the very first.
Oh, I remember those.
Well, you know what? It still has a great picture.
But it doesn't have HDMI.
We do installations for them.
It doesn't have HDMI, though.
Keeping it going for us.
Oh, wait a minute now. And does the Gateway have a computer on it attached to it?
No.
You didn't get one of those?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's just a Gateway television set.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm looking at the Roku box right now, and it has a whole bunch of wires going in and out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's not wireless.
No. The problem is the wireless one needs HDMI, and I don't think your Gateway – I think your Gateway TV does not have HDMI.
I doubt it. I mean, that's circa 19
– Yeah, no, I remember those Gateway televisions.
2006 or something like that.
Yeah. So you're going to need to get probably a Roku too, but it does have Wi-Fi on it. So make sure you get the Roku that supports – component, okay? Because that's how your TV's hooked up, is component.
Okay.
Okay. So with component and the Roku, you could just hook it up to your Wi-Fi box, and then you won't have to use the computer at all. You won't have to change the settings on the computer at all, and your Roku will receive... Netflix without any setting changes. I'm just looking to see which Roku.
I like what you're telling me, but you're kind of like over my head.
I understand. Somehow, and I don't know how, you've hooked up the Roku to your computer.
Well, not actually. The Roku is connected to the TV system.
Yeah, and then what's it connected to for the internet? Do you see a wire going to your cable modem, or where's it going?
Jeez.
See, it needs to get internet from somewhere, right?
We have a wireless router, and it's supposed to be getting it.
Okay. Well, if it's getting it from the Wi-Fi, then I don't know why the computer would have any importance at all.
I don't know. I was on the phone with Cox for
Oh, that's days, the that's your first mistake right there.
Roku for days, and the only thing that ever worked was if we totally disabled all the security.
On the computer?
From the computer, right.
Yeah. So that makes no sense at all, unless you have... somehow configured your router to block Netflix traffic, but that doesn't make any sense either.
That's why I thought it would just be easier to get a bigger monitor and watch.
No, and you don't need to do that. You should be able to watch it on your Gateway in the living room.
It would be nice.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it's set up. You know, you might, one solution would be to call Cox and say, hey, can you come out here and set it up? And you'll get a nice cable installer who will set it up so that you don't have to change security at all. You'll have to pay $150. But that's cheaper than a big monitor.
Okay.
I'm not sure what's going on. When you go into the computer, what do you do to change your security settings?
It's been quite a while since I've done it.
You shouldn't need to do that at all, and I don't understand why you do.
We have to put in the long IP address, I guess, and then it brings up a screen and...
That's bizarre.
Disable everything.
Disable everything. And so here's how a normal setup would be. Here's how the normal setup would be. You plug the Roku into the TV set. You you then turn on the TV set and go to the Roku and go into settings on the Roku. And you say, here's my Wi-Fi name. Here's my Wi-Fi password. You have a password on it?
I don't think so.
Well, then you just say, here's my Wi-Fi name. And it should see it, and Netflix should work. Everything should work.
Okay.
So somewhere it got more complicated than it needed to be.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. But I, it's...
Yeah, and I
was able to get hold of you 4 years ago when this first started happening.
Yeah.
And it's been so long since I've dinged around with it that.
That's why you need. I would say disconnect everything. Start over. Follow the instructions that come with a Roku. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We have all sorts of speculation about what was going on with our last caller. The chat room's great. They're saying, well, I think she... This is probably the best guess, but it's all a guess because, we can't really tell from the description what's going on. Best guess was perhaps our caller had, some years ago, turned on a wireless password, which is a good thing. You should, if you have a Wi-Fi access point, you should always be using a wireless password. But maybe her old Roku box didn't support the wireless encryption on the new box. Perhaps it was WEP only and she was using WPA. Or perhaps she forgot her password because she didn't seem to think there was a password. So what Cox was having her do, and this makes sense, is go into the router settings and disable encryption. Turn off the password, at least for a while. So that's a good guess. It's only a guess. We can't get enough information to really know for sure. But I think if you're still listening... I think probably what you want to do, the best thing to do would be to start from scratch. Hire somebody smart and have it all set up properly. It may be that you need, if you get a newer Roku, you can use WPA and then you can leave the password on, which is what you want. So I suspect when you said you were going to your computer to change security settings, what you were doing was, and it sounds like from the description, changing the settings on the router. The good news is you can have a perfectly secure computer, perfectly secure router, and use your Roku in your living room on the big screen TV. If it's all properly configured, it should all work. I think it's just a question of getting the settings right. That's why getting somebody to come in and redo it from scratch probably be the easiest thing. But you know what? I want to give you credit. You could probably do it yourself. Just get in there. Take it all apart and start over. Read the manuals, read the instructions. Do it from scratch. And then this time, remember your password. You might have to reset your router. Earl in Reston, Virginia. Hi, Earl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Happy New Year to you and your organization. And
Thank you.
Special happy birthday to your mother born on the 2nd.
Thank you. Mom will appreciate that. Are you really? Happy New Year and happy birthday at the same time.
Thank you so much. Leo, I bought the HP Media Smart server that went out of business.
Yeah, as I said, they were using the Windows Media Server, which is a home server, which is a great thing, but they stopped Microsoft in their infinite wisdom.
Is there a way I can use that as a server to store my media? I inherited a whole bunch of records and CDs, and I'd like to digitize them. Can I use that anyway?
Sure. You know, even though they stopped selling it and Microsoft stopped supporting Windows Home Server, it was really a great solution. You know, what they want you to do is to buy the Windows Server, the big boy operating system, and I think that that's not as easy to use, or use Windows 8's built-in server capabilities, but you can still use Windows Home Server just fine. The question is, and I bet you this is what your question is, it's working for you now, right?
I didn't even get it set up before I went out of business.
Oh, how frustrating is that?
So I still got the fresh program, software that they sent.
Well, here's what I would... I hate... You can use it. Of course, Microsoft's not going to be updating it.
Yeah.
But it's in the house, so I don't think that's a big deal. It's not like you have to have super security on it or anything like that. It's on the other side of a router. You have a router? You must.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So that's protecting it from the outside world. So security is not such a big deal on the WHS server. You could set it up, and the key, of course, is getting those old records digitized.
Yeah, I've got records, CDs, tapes, and...
You need for the records and the tapes, you need a way to get those analog signals into bits, digitize them.
CD, I got the equipment to do that.
Good man. The CD is already digital, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yes, sir.
So once you get all that stuff into bits, yeah, you could store it on the home server, and it'll be available to all your computers in the house. Great. It'll be available to any devices that can use Windows Media Server, because that's a Windows Media Server. So, yes, indeed, if you put those digital files on there, they will be visible. And it's a great way to use the Windows Home Server.
Fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome, Earl. Great to talk to you. Happy birthday.
My pleasure. And again, happy birthday to your mom.
Thanks. Take care. A lot of people, instead of using Windows Home Server, I don't know why Microsoft killed this, by the way. It was nicely done. It was easy to implement. It had lots of great plugins. My friend Paul Thurrott, who's a Windows guru, the man at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and our host of our Windows podcast, Windows Weekly, was a huge fan of Windows Home Server. Used it a lot. He travels every year. He goes to Europe to live for a few weeks, and it was a great solution for him to give him access to his files, to back up stuff as he was traveling. I'm not sure why it wasn't just HP. There were other companies, not many, but a couple other companies making Windows Home Server. But at some point, Microsoft, for reasons no one understood, I guess because it didn't sell, stopped making it. This is a category of products, though. Unfortunately, there are many others making similar products called network attached storage. You might hear us talk about this sometime. It is a box. It's really a computer. It's focused on storage, so often it'll have multiple hard drives in it. It doesn't have a monitor, mouse, or keyboard because that box connects to your internet or your network, your router, and you control it from another computer using your browser. But what these network-attached storage devices do is they allow you to have a centralized, massive storage device in your closet or somewhere that can be used to back up all the computers in your system. It can be used to store all your media, photos, movies, and music. And serve that media to a variety of devices, not just a computer, but lots of devices. So there are a number of companies that make these. I use Synology. It's very good, very easy to use. Synology. I also use Netgear's ReadyNAS. Those are very good. There are a lot of companies that make these. They're a little, in some ways, better than Windows Home Server. They're running on variants usually of Linux, which is a free and Unix-like strong operating system, good for this kind of thing. Windows is probably overkill for something like this. They also, usually, Windows Home Servers tended to have one or maybe two drives in them. These devices often have room for four drives in the enclosure, which gives you better data redundancy and of course, lots more capacity. It also makes them a lot more expensive. But you can get Synology drives with just a single drive in it. There are other choices. There are other open source choices. Take It 2 is reminding me about Amahi, Amahi, which is a really neat home server system designed to kind of take the place of Windows Home Server. I like Amahi. I've actually set up Amahi servers. They work quite well. But you'll be providing your own hardware for this. This is also based on Linux. I think that's what happened was... people said, why do I need a Windows home server? I can just run this on a Linux operating system. Amahi's a great idea if you're a techie and you can roll your own, you want to save some money by doing your own thing. But for most people, going to a store and buying a Synology or a ReadyNAS is probably the simplest way to do that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Alex in North Hollywood. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. I have a couple of Mac Minis that I use for music applications. Actually, I called before about this long time ago, but there's a different issue with Mac Mini. It's also in the back. And when I have to use, there's no way to actually access them.
I think I can't. Your call's breaking up. Are you? Can you get closer to your wireless base station, or are you on a? Yeah, a little bit better.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, a little better. Say it again. So you have a Mac Mini. I heard that.
Yeah, they have the on and off button all the way in the back, and I use this for music application purposes. So it's rack mounted. Is there a way to be able to turn on and off the Mac?
Yes, absolutely. So, in fact, we'll answer that question when we come back. He wants to be able to turn off his Mac Mini and turn it on again without having to physically access the button. We'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think he was on the moon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Just an update. Last week we had a guy call from Lancaster, California, who was so frustrated because he has an iPad 1, first generation iPad. And DirecTV, unfortunately, which he liked watching the bowl games. He was a football fan, a coach, in fact, at an L.A. area junior college. And he said, I was so frustrated because he couldn't watch DirecTV anymore because the upgrade required iOS 6 or iOS 7, and he couldn't put that on his iPad 1. And it made me so mad because Apple, this is a three-year-old product. Now, I understand sometimes you have to obsolete hardware. You have to obsolete software. There comes a time when it's time, for instance, Microsoft this spring will say, it's all over for Windows XP. But that's 10 years old. To say that a computer that is 3 years old is working perfectly well is obsolete is pure corporate greed. That's the only way I can express it. And it just made me mad. So I sent Al an iPad. And I just wanted to mention the update. We got a message from Al on our website. That he got the iPad the Christmas Eve, which was my intent, and he's very happy with it. So Al, that's great. I'm glad you got it, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. So there's the update. Coach got his iPad, and I haven't heard from Apple, of course. I don't fully expect to. So Alex in North Hollywood has, and I'm not going to pick you up because your phone's still breaking up on me. I can barely understand you, but I did understand this much. He has an iPad mini. Now, the switch on the iPad mini is a physical on-off switch is on the back. And he has the iPad mini mounted in such a way that it can't reach the switch. So he's wanting to know, is there a way to turn it off and on again without having to physically do that switch? And there he is. Certainly, if you have a Apple keyboard, you can with the mouse and keyboard shut it off by going to the Apple menu and pulling it down and saying shut down. That's on the Apple menu. That's the way to turn it off. And then the keyboard itself, if you have the right Apple keyboard, has an on-off switch on it. That's because Steve Jobs hates on-off switches, and many Macs don't even have them. So that's one way to do this. Another way to do it would be with using Apple's remote desktop technology, which you could also use to turn the machine off and on again. But I think the easiest way is to make sure you have an Apple keyboard. I think they all have on-off switches, don't they? Maybe not. But have an Apple keyboard with an on-off switch, and you should be able to do that. Moving along to Michelle in Los Angeles. Hi, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Happy Hogmanay.
What is it? Hogmanay?
That's the Scottish New Year.
Oh, happy Hogmanay. That's wonderful. Now, yesterday, or the day before, I guess, the 26th was Boxing Day.
Yes, that's when you box up everything after Christmas.
Yes, and send it back. Actually, I'm told it comes from the days of the manor house, where the lady of the manor would box up all the leftover food from the Christmas feast and bring it to the peasants.
Yes, we did that all the time.
But I think in this modern era, it is. It's boxing up all the junk you got for Christmas and bringing it back to the retailer. And then isn't there a little Christmas coming up in Scotland?
Gosh, I don't know about that. Sorry.
Hogmanay is the one we're going to see. I think the 12th day after Christmas, I think, is called Little Christmas.
What do you know?
Well, I'm telling you something about your country.
Ah, well, this is...
You're from Los Angeles, right? That's where we celebrate Festivus. So what can I do for you, Michelle?
Okay, so I got a text message in my Android phone that you recommended 2 years ago.
All good.
And it was from John saying Merry Christmas. And
you don't know a John?
Well, John, if it said John, it had to be in my contacts, and I looked in my
contacts. It does not have to be in your contacts.
Pardon?
Maybe it does.
So I looked in the contacts, and there was John, even attached to an image from my gallery, and I'm going, who is this? So I go to my computer, where I have a database that is actually the source of all my contacts, and that gets synced to my phone wirelessly every whatever.
So that's where it came from, right?
No, there was no John in there.
Let me ask you a question, Michelle. Are you on Google Plus?
No.
Okay. Because I have in my contacts all these people I kind of don't really know because I circled them on Google Plus. How about this? Facebook.
I don't have any friends on Facebook except one person I play Scrabble with, and that's on purpose.
Okay. Good, good, good. I don't blame you.
Don't even have my real name on there.
Yes.
I don't have anything real on there.
Good. Yeah, that's the way to use Facebook, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Because both Facebook, Google+, some people do it with Twitter, can be set up to automatically synchronize between that and your contact list. Now, it blows your contact list up because it has all sorts of people you kind of don't really know or anything. How about, do you Twitter, LinkedIn?
I do not. No, 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 no.
Well, you don't seem to have anybody that's, I don't know where this John came from. Do you use Outlook?
I do.
Okay. So Outlook has a setting that will automatically add to your contact list anybody you ever email.
It doesn't do that in my computer. It does those hints. I can't remember what it's called, where you start typing someone.
But right. Well, if
it does not get added to
okay.
contacts.
So you're looking through your contacts. But is that John in your contacts?
No, it was in the contacts phone, but it was not in the computer's database.
So we're doing some detective work. Somebody on the couple of calls ago said, that wasn't tech support, that was detective work. Sometimes what we do is detective work. Sometimes the best tech support is detective work.
That's exactly what I say about I'm a computer consultant, so I say exactly the same thing. I know I have to ask all these questions and start going back in time, but I'm stumped on this one.
Often people don't even ask the right question, you know, like our caller who was having trouble with her Roku because she had to change computer settings. Sometimes you have to rephrase the question. So here's the thing. There's a couple of possibilities. One, on KitKat, and I don't know if your phone is on KitKat yet.
No, I don't know. What was that, the operating system?
Yeah, Android 4.4. If your phone got updated, and some have, the newest thing is you get caller ID, even if it's not in your address book. So, but you're saying it's showing up in your contacts on your phone.
It did. It was in my contacts. First place I looked to see who the heck this person was.
So just so you know, and this people will start experiencing this, that in future you may not have to have somebody in your contacts for you to have a caller ID.
Okay.
That's just going to be something that's going to happen from Google. So what we now know is that something on your phone has John as a contact, and that's synchronized with your contacts on your phone.
But why was it not in my third-party program? Maybe it just happened that minute.
I don't know. I mean, Skype. Do you use Skype?
I do use Skype, yes.
So that's what you're going to try to figure out is what other app let John in. And then synchronize with your contacts. You can also go into your contact settings and say, don't attach, you know, I don't want to see Facebook. I don't want to see Twitter. I don't want, you know, you can control that a little bit too.
I think I did that already, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm on 4.2.2 Android version.
Oh, yeah. So I don't think that you would get this automatic caller ID for feature.
I finally did call the phone number that was on the text message. I called it from Skype, so I wouldn't call it on my own phone because I was scared something had been done on the phone. And it really was. I didn't speak to John, but his voicemail answered and said, this is John somebody. I couldn't make out.
And was it somebody you don't know this person? There's
don't know this person.
No recognition at all.
My knowledge. But I was just a little bit afraid that it was a virus or some horrible thing being dropped in my phone, but it does appear to be a real person.
Yeah, I don't think it's a virus, but I do think it's going to take a little detective work to figure out where that because you've got an image, a name and image came from.
No, the image came from my own phone. I have it from my own gallery.
Wait a minute. There's a picture of John in your gallery?
No, but I attach images from my gallery to a lot of contacts just so it looks pretty.
So this wasn't a picture of John.
No.
Okay, good. Oh, then I'm relieved. Okay, so it wasn't, because that would really be weird. Some guy you don't know, and there's a picture of him on your phone. That would be strange. So it's just a random picture that you use.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So all that really happened was somewhere in your context, this cross-reference between the incoming phone number and the name John happened.
Okay, so it's not as scary as I thought.
I don't think it's scary.
Okay. Okay.
It's but you know, this is you're in the business, you understand.
Yes.
That computers are deterministic. I mean, there is absolute causality. There's no magic. There's no voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has a cause and effect. But
exactly.
Because they're so complex, sometimes the cause is steeped in mystery.
Yes.
And I think we have a cause that's just steeped in mystery here. And we may never know, but there is something happened. Some program on your phone put that stuff in your contact list. I'm not sure which one.
I'll tell you another weird thing that's happening on my phone, and that my
Well, hold on. I want to hear it, but I have to take a break. So can you hold on?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. What is it? Hogmanay?
Hogmanay.
Hogmanay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the number, 888-827-5536. We are celebrating Hogmanay, the last day of the year with Michelle in Los Angeles. Happy they have fireworks in Edinburgh on Hogmanay.
Don't know. I'm from Glasgow.
those Edinburghians, they're strange. They do weird things. You know, my grandfather was Gordon Dunlap, so I have a little Scott in there somewhere. So we were talking, besides about the mystery contact.
Yes, another mystery, which is costing me money. And every few months, my cellular bill goes up. For some reason, about $20. And when I talked to my provider about it, who's also third party through Verizon,
mm-hmm.
He did some investigating and says that, you're being charged for those images that you're sending with your text messages. And no, I'm not sending any images with my text messages.
What is that weird? So you don't do MMS, that's the multimedia texting. So you're not sending pictures.
No, I'm not.
But he's saying that those $20 are multimedia messages?
Yes. And so he's trying to find out, you know, it's all gobbledygook what he's telling me. He's trying to find out...
And by the way, I got to point out, this is Michelle's business. This is my business. This is Michelle's business. And it sounds like gobbledygook to us. Imagine how it sounds to a normal person.
Yeah.
I tell you, the cell phone companies in this country are out of control. Out of control. I mean, for all we know, they're just making it up. And, you know, every fifth person, they had $20 every once in a while. Just see what happens.
Yeah.
See if you notice.
Okay, so you've never heard of anything like this either.
Well, first of all, they shouldn't charge you extra for MMS. I don't know what kind of package you have. You know, do you have an unlimited texting plan?
As far as I know, yes. Which I barely use.
Are you on an iPhone?
I am on an Android.
That's
phone.
Right. You told us that. Which Android phone?
It's the
Galaxy S3?
Nexus.
Okay. Good phone.
You told me to get it.
Whoever told you to get it was a smart and good-looking fella. You know, sometimes an iPhone, if you were using iMessage, an iPhone might occasionally use another protocol that might cost you money. Are you using any other messaging programs besides the built-in text messaging?
I used to use WhatsApp, but I don't really use. Once in a blue moon with one person, I use WhatsApp.
Web 1002 is saying if you do not have a texting plan, Verizon will charge you extra for images. So I would check your plan And make sure that you do have, in fact, a texting plan.
Well, that was the first thing we did. So, yes, as far as I know, it's...
You do.
It's unlimited, which was actually a surprise to me because I didn't even ask that.
Yeah, I would, do you ever use group SMS?
No.
Okay. You got me, and I would call for, you said it's not Verizon, it's somebody through Verizon, or?
Yes, and they're apparently talking to Verizon.
Good.
So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you did the right thing by not using Verizon directly, but by using an independent third party who will, be your ombudsman.
Hopefully, yes, but yeah. I just thought you might know the answer.
The sudden jump.
Yeah.
And it's not data related. He says it's MMS. That's very odd.
That's what he said, which I'm not doing.
Are you getting pictures? Are you receiving pictures?
No.
Maybe that John guy's been sending you pictures. You didn't know it.
Didn't see it. Didn't get it.
Yeah. It is conceivable that there is a rogue app on your phone that is doing something behind your back.
That's what we're thinking too, yes.
That is conceivable. I would check through your apps, make sure that you have everything you have is mainstream and, from a well-known company. You want to stay away from the weird wallpaper packs and things like that that the Android stores have. That's generally where they'll put malware.
Oh.
So don't download, the super duper wallpaper pack or, unlock emojis pack. There's also these little strange, they're often from Russia. Stay away from those.
I have PixSpeed wallpaper, which seems to be a very popular program.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. If you look at the reviews and a lot of people are using it. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking at PixSpeed, biggest collection of top quality animated wallpapers. It is free. That always makes me a little nervous.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I'm not impugning them, but what's in it for them? These are nice wallpapers. You might want to just, see, so here's the scam. And by the way, Google would normally, if they found out about this, discontinue this app. But the scam would be, every once in a while, it sends a text message to a paid service, and you get billed for that. So that would be the thing I'd be aware of. 10 to 50 million people have installed this. It doesn't seem as if this could be too harmful. It's got a great review, great rating. I just wonder who it's from and why they're giving it away.
I wonder that about all the free apps.
Yeah. You might want to uninstall that app. Are you really tied to their wallpaper?
Pardon me?
Are you really tied to their wallpaper? Do you
I've already downloaded about 2,000 of them, so I think I can live with that.
I would wonder if that's it. Seems odd. But look at what you've got and try to stick with mainstream apps would be my other advice.
Okay.
Just because unlike Apple, although this can happen with Apple too, Apple does really kind of carefully check every app. The problem is there's 10,000 new apps a day, so they can't do a perfect job. Stuff does leak through on the App Store. But Google doesn't even make a pretense of that. So it is possible for malware of this kind to sneak into the store. Usually when it's discovered, it's immediately deleted and killed, but I don't know. And I think that you're in good hands. The fact that your provider is paying attention, is working with Verizon to fix this is good to me, a very good sign.
Okay.
I think you're doing the right thing. It may be that these wallpapers are not coming in via data. It may be these new wallpapers are actually coming in via MMS, and then Verizon would, in fact, bill you for it. And they might even kick back a little bit to the wallpaper guy. Not exactly illegal, not wrong, but it would cost you. Why are they giving you this for free? New wallpapers daily. 500,000 HD wallpapers. Why is this all free? That would always be my question. What are they giving you this for? Lots of good reviews on this. Nobody seems to have any problem with it. But that always makes... nothing's free. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Do they say that in Scotland? There's no such thing as a free lunch. I bet they do. I bet they invented it. Bill in Redondo Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Leo. I've got a question about Facebook. A friend of mine wants to get out of Facebook, to eliminate the thing altogether.
I don't blame him.
So that nobody can use it.
Yep. So you can cancel your account, but Facebook doesn't want you to do that by accident. So they take a little while, and they always give you the option to come back. In fact, I've done this once before. Getting rid of your Facebook account is kind of hard. But you go to Facebook.com and go into your settings, and you can delete your account. They'll tell you right then and there, okay, we're not going to delete it for a few months. We're going to keep it in an inactive state. If you don't do anything in a few months, we will delete everything. They want to give you a way to get to back out of it, which I guess is not unreasonable.
So at least you can immediately make it so that it's...
No one can see you. No one can message you. But don't in any way interact with Facebook, or they'll reactivate you at the drop of a hat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last couple of shows of 2013. We'll be celebrating the 10th anniversary of the birth of the tech guy next week. It's Hugmanay. That's what that means. Let's go back to the phones. Heather Haman, our phone ranger, is collecting fine callers just for us. She's carefully grooming them, putting their collars down, hiding the labels in their sweaters, making sure their hair, every hair is in place before we put them on the air.
Can I use my spit on my finger?
You
like
can,
spit?
Just like a mom, you can spit on their hair. And
okay, now you look perfectly nerdy and ready to talk to Leo.
You know, before I was old and fat, I used to do a lot of television. And we had a floor director. That's the guy. There's always in a real TV studio, there's a person, gal or guy, standing hidden behind, kind of in between the cameras. And his or her sole job is to, well, they have a couple. One is to point to the camera that you're on so you look at the right camera. But the other really is to make sure your fly is up, you don't have spinach in your teeth, and you don't have a flyaway hair. Because in a television studio,
there's a lot of things going on.
If you have a hair sticking out, the light will catch it. And it looks like you've got a big thing coming out of your head. So we had a wonderful floor director, Steve, who would do exactly that. He'd come over to me,
look at him like this,
and plaster my hair down. And you really don't have an option to run away. You're tied to a mic, and it's just like, well, okay.
Did you always smell like coffee and cigarettes, or with his vice?
No, Steve was a nice guy. No, his vice was sipping bourbon, but that was after the show.
No, okay. Did you ever smell like grilled cheese? Or?
No. Steve was a wonderful guy, and we're still in touch on Facebook, actually. And actually, I wish, Steve, you just pay attention. If you're watching our video feed of the show, if you see a hair sticking up, would you just let me know, and I'll lick my fingers and glue it down.
Or call me, and I'll powder his forehead.
Yeah, he used to do that, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Who should... No, actually, I think he'd call the makeup lady who would come out. And
oh, of course.
Makeup! Mr. Laporte is shining. Those were the days. Those were the days. Do you have a caller you would like me to talk to here, Heather?
Yes. Let's talk to all of them at once. No, let's just talk to Rick.
Can I do that? Do I have the capability?
You should do it on New Year's Eve because it'll be like a party.
Can I just mash the buttons and everybody's online on the air?
I like the idea of it.
It'd be a little chaotic. Let's just do one right now.
Yeah, line one.
Line one. Rick in San Diego, as Anchorman says
it.
Hello, Rick.
Yes. Hello, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah.
Have you seen Anchorman 2 yet?
Oh, no.
No, he insists that it's pronounced San Diego.
I know. the guy is so boring.
Ron Burgundy. It's San Diego.
Unbelievable.
What can I do for you, Rick?
Well, I'm really happy to talk with you today. I enjoy your program immensely, and I've been listening to when you were on KFI in the early beginning.
10 years ago, in 2004, kind of hard to believe it's been that long.
Exactly, but I like it more when you get Bill Handel in trouble with Marjorie.
And I do that every Friday morning with Bill, who's the great morning man in Los Angeles, number one morning guy in Los Angeles. And I've been
listening to him when he was on Fright Night in the Morning.
Oh man, is he such a character. I do not know how he stays on the air. He is so outspoken.
Yeah, but he's for real.
He's for real. That's why people love him. He's genuine.
He is for real.
Yep.
And it's great talking to Heather. I'm more happy now talking to you about tech issues than talking with her many years ago.
Dr. Dean about, show.
About
colostomy. No, let's not talk about colonoscopies.
No.
That's the one thing I... That's very high tech, by the way, but I don't think we should really...
I have a question about the Windows 8.
Okay.
I had Windows 7. I loved it. My computer crashed. I had to get another one, and it went to Windows 8.
Sigh.
Now I heard many times your professions of Windows 8, you know, not being where it should be. And I was wondering, they have an upgrade to 8.1.
Yes.
Is that going to be any better for
me? It is better. You know, my attitude is at this point, Windows 8's been out for a year. You kind of have to get the latest version of Windows. A, because it's hard not to. I mean, you can still find Windows 7 if you look hard enough. But B, because it's the latest version. It's going to be supported longer. There are improvements in it. And here's the bottom line. You can make Windows 8 behave a lot like Windows 7 with just a few little programs. The reason I don't like Windows 8, and I'm not alone, is because it's kind of a adolescent. It's in between the future for Microsoft, which they've decided is tablets, touch computing, and the past, which was desktop computing. And so it's a little of both. And you've got two browsers, two versions of Internet Explorer, one for the desktop, one for the touch screen. It's confusing. And you have different versions of the control panel, one for the touch screen, one for the desktop. And it's confusing. However, once you get used to it, it's usable. If you decide you like the desktop, Windows 8.1 lets you boot right to the desktop, so you don't see the tiles.
Right.
You can, with the addition of an inexpensive or free program, Classic Shell, or my favorite, which is $5 from StarDock.com. It's called Start 8, Start and the number 8, adds a start menu to your desktop. So if you've got 8.1, you boot into the desktop, and then you use Start 8, it looks just like Windows 7.
Okay, so if I upgraded to 8.1, then I would be able to use the a typical start menu?
No. Microsoft did not add a start menu. They added a start button, which is not the same thing, but you can, with third-party applications, add a start menu.
Oh, that was the application you just...
Yeah. No, you don't have... Windows 8 or 8.1, you can add a third-party start menu. The 8.1 does let you boot to the desktop, which is something people have been begging for. And here's the interesting story. I think, frankly, Windows 8 and Surface RT cost Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, his job. I think the board fired him over this. And I think Microsoft is retrenching because they've already... told off the record two of our Windows experts, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they've already said the next version of Windows, Windows Threshold, will have a start menu. So the menu is coming back.
I see. So that program would be available in the future to replace...
Well, no, I said, with a third-party app, Start 8 from StarDock or Classic Shell... You can add a start menu. It's a little program that'll run in the background and give you a start menu.
I see. Great.
So I would say at this point, get Windows 8. Oh, you already did.
I'm on 8.
Yeah, just get used to it. Oh, definitely upgrade to 8.1. Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, you enjoy your holiday season, and I thank you very much for your expertise on the show.
Thank you, Dave. Happy New Year to you too.
All right.
Take care. Bye bye. Yeah, I'm not, I am, what can you do? This is where Microsoft wants you to be. So ride the horse in the direction it's going, I guess. Classic Shell gives you a start menu. What can I say? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, that's the number. Getting away for the holiday? You're going to take the day off, Heather Hammond. Kim Schaefer will be in here. Answer the phones tomorrow. You should come to our New Year's party. You know I'm doing I'm calling it 24 hours of 2014. So, I don't know why. This seemed like a good idea at the time.
It's not going to be on the radio, but it. But you know what happened last year? Lisa and I were, you know, we're in a festive mood. We went out to the ocean, went to Point Reyes or whatever, and we were watching Rockin' New Year's Eve. Now, we're in West Coast time. They showed the ball drop at 9 p.m., and that was it, because it was back east, and that was it. And then it was like old movies. There was nothing between 9 and midnight, nothing. So we're just sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know, somebody ought to do a New Year's Eve broadcast that not only has New Year's Eve for every time zone, but starts with New Zealand and continues right to the bitter end, which I guess is Hawaii or somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. So 4 a.m. Pacific time, 7 a.m. East Coast time on New Year's Eve, we're turning on the cameras in our beautiful studio. We have a beautiful studio. We're going to have a magic show. We're going to have balloon. We have a balloon drop. We've rigged the balloon drop so that with balloons drop, you know, we'll start with New Zealand or wherever, and we'll talk to somebody via Skype in every single time zone. We'll do the countdown to 2014, 4 a.m. New Year's Eve. It'll be New Zealand or wherever. 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year. The balloon drop will happen, but those balloons are carefully rigged so that we can then pull a rope and they go right back up into the ceiling. We can do it again an hour
later.
I love
it.
So we're going to have, I think they're 26 or 27 time zones. So we're going to have 27 balloon drops. We are going to have bands, we're going to have music, we're going to have games, and I'm going to stay up from 4 a.m. Pacific time on New Year's Eve to 4 a.m. New Year's Day, 24 hours, broadcasting live. So if you're one of those people that just, you know, you're wondering, hey, what happened? Whatever happened to rockin' New Year's Eve? It's 9 o'clock and I'm ready to party. We'll be there for you until the bitter end, until every time zone in the world, on the globe, is in 2014. We're going to start with the first and end with the last. We're going to go the whole 24 hours.
Who was saying you were so smart earlier?
Now, this was such a bad idea.
Uh-oh.
But I got a different bow tie for every time zone. Because I'm going to wear a tuxedo. You got to wear a tuxedo. And at the end, I'm going to lose, just like Jerry Lewis, I'll loosen the tuxedo. I'll sing You'll Never Walk Alone. And I'll walk off into the sunset. Okay. Collapse. I don't know what I was thinking.
Maybe if you get tired, you could take a nap and we'll roll that highlight reel that John and Alex.
Nope. No naps. No naps. They're no taking bets reels. In the chat room as to when I'll collapse. It's going to be fun. We have a magic show. We hired Brian Brushwood. He's going to come up here. I think there's flames. I think there's crazy stuff.
Will he cut me in half?
Do you want to be cut in half? He will. Come up here. I can't promise he can put you back because he's not that good a magician.
Yeah.
But if... No. Come on. You got to be here. It'll be fun. Rockin' New Year's Eve. I'm calling it the 24 hours of 2014 because it will be 2014 24
That's
times.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's poetic.
Yeah. Moving on to Las Vegas, where they also know how to celebrate New Year's. Dave in Las Vegas. Dave, are you one of those people who lives in Las Vegas who stays away from downtown, stays away from the Strip during these kinds of things?
Yeah.
Yeah. People who live in Vegas, they don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Yes, Dave, what can I do for you?
Yeah, I'd like to say I love your show and I love your network.
Thank you.
It's a great network. I enjoy it very much. And also, I want to give a shout-out to Cox Customer Support. They helped me out.
Good.
Big time last night.
Good.
Went the extra mile, gave me, even called me back after a dropped call.
Thank you for sharing that, because we hear so many bad tech support stories. It's nice to know when somebody does a good job. Let's thank them. We want to encourage that. So good on you.
You're the tech guy, and I wanted to make sure that all those tech guys out there,
I have a soft spot in my heart for Cox Cable Las Vegas. You were one of the very first cable markets to take our television show, The Screensavers, and to take the Tech TV network into your hearts. The first personal appearance we made, Kate Botello and I, was in Las Vegas. I remember getting out of the car with Kate. She grabbed me. Her nails dug into my hand. She said, "There are people here." We had no idea. There are people here. So what can I do for you? So thank you, Cox. A little props. to Cox Cable.
George and tech, Level 2 Tech really helped me out.
That's awesome.
I got a new Mac Mini for Christmas.
Hey, how nice.
Yeah, well, yeah, seeing as I was on an old cheese grater running 10.4.
The Mini is probably faster than the top-of-the-line Mac Pro from a few years ago.
Oh, definitely, because that's what I was running.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, I was wondering if an SSD drive attached via Thunderbolt would be a faster boot, better, whatever.
Yeah, it probably would be. Now, some Minis do come with SSD. SSD, solid-state disk, is, in my opinion, the biggest, nicest, best thing you can do for any computer, if it's a late-model computer, because these solid-state drives, and it's the same kind of memory you put in your camera or, you know, anything else, have some real speed benefits, especially on reading. They're totally random access. There's no seek time. You don't have to wait for the drive to go around. There's no moving parts. And they are really, really fast.
Well, my question really is, would an external...
Yes. The answer is yes. The issue, and the reason I say it has to be a late model machine, is because the drive is fast, but remember, it has to be connected to the CPU. It has to be connected to the motherboard somehow. And if you have an older... We call the connection a bus. Think of it as a bus full of people carrying, it's data, not people. And so if the I.O., the input-output bus, is slower than the drive, you'll never see the benefit. You have to make sure you have an I.O. bus that's as fast as, or better yet, faster than the SSD.
Would that be Thunderbolt?
Thunderbolt is fast enough, yes. You will see a benefit. You know, ideally you want SATA 3 or better.
Yeah, I'm not going to open it up.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Thunderbolt, let me see how fast Thunderbolt maxes out at. This, unfortunately, yeah, it's 10 gigabits per channel. That's pretty fast. That's certainly going to see a benefit from from SSD. In fact, you can boot over Thunderbolt, and that would make your boot drive very fast. So 10 gigabits, two 10 gigabit channels, yes, you should see some real benefit.
Yeah, because Otherworld Computing is coming out with a new enclosure, or they say they are anyway, via Thunderbolt. And they look pretty good.
Remember, Apple, that often Thunderbolt drives don't come with a Thunderbolt cable, and Apple charges a lot for those, so add that to the cost.
I will, but I think OWC really comes through with their products, including cables and everything. So
I love them. That's who I get all my stuff from, maxsales.com, Otherworld Computing. Yeah, and if they have a Thunderbolt SSD drive, you're going to get a fast drive, a well-made fast drive, yep.
They're coming out with a new one, and it looks pretty good. It looks like it's the size of a mouse.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, so it'll go well with the Mini. I've seen that other one that I think it's LaCie or something.
Right.
It's a ruggedized drive. It's orange and yellow or whatever, and it just looks tacky.
Hideous. I have an Otherworld Computing enclosure. When I bought a SSD upgrade for my MacBook Air...
I saw that on your network.
Yeah, they sent me an enclosure, which is probably the same one they're selling. Put the old SSD in that, use it over USB 3, and it's great. It would be even better over Thunderbolt, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's coming out, they say it's coming soon, so whatever.
Yeah, I would recommend that. It's all about money. If you can afford it, do it. It's going to make a big difference. And the Mac Mini will boot off of it, which is very nice. You can say, don't use your internal drive, or just use it for data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Final segment of the show today. I'll be back tomorrow, and of course, as I mentioned, New Year's Eve. Dick DeBartolo is here. He's the Gizwiz, our gadget guru. You're going to CES this year, right, Dick?
I am. I'm going to get stuff for the Gizwiz and whatever else you need out there.
That'll be enough. Merry Christmas. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did. Thank you so much for my fruit basket. God, I never had a fruit basket that had an iPod, the new iPod Mini, the laptop. Oh, if any of the other hosts are listening.
Shut up. Well, yeah. Thank you for all you do all year long.
Oh,
we love having
kidding?
You on the show. And I heard you had a little crisis, actually, this week.
Yes, I did. I was downloading photos, and I think Windows was trying to do an update, and suddenly my computer rebooted and came back with sign-in, and I signed in and says, your user profile cannot be loaded. And that was it. Anything I try to do, get into settings, everything, he said, I'm sorry, you do not have the authority to do that. So I pretty much had nothing. So Dan in the chat room took a look from, you know, via his computer, sent me a link to...
he's so an IT guy. In. He'd probably be...
Yes, yes. And he said, Dick, strangely, your profile should have a duplicate. There's no duplicate here. So I'm not quite sure what to do. And then another viewer, Michael Richardson, who also does IT. God, Leo, he spent an hour and a half, created a new profile and a new thing and moved all my programs, as many as he could find, over into my new name. So, but it was if it wasn't for friends of Twit, it would be a total catastrophe.
Well, I'm glad it got... So did you ever find out what was wrong? I mean, do you know
no.
what happened?
No, I'm just using my new name. Leo Laporte, I'm using.
Oh, that won't help you for very long.
No, I know. And then every time you go to sign up, you know, trying to get into MIRC, well, you're not registered. You didn't pay for a license.
Start all over again.
Exactly.
Well, Happy New Year. Dick is, of
Thank
course,
you.
Mad Magazine's maddest writer, has been for many a moon, but he's also a gadget hound and joins us every week to tell us about a hot new gadget. What do you got?
Well, you know what, Leo? It's something you played because I sent you one, and New Year's Eve is coming. So if you just want a fun, cheapy game for New Year's Eve.
I like this. Are you going to do this? Balloon pop?
Yes, except boom, boom, balloon.
Boom, boom, balloon.
Balloon. Okay, it's from Spin Master. I looked yesterday. I didn't check today,
so
but
Spin Master's not working in the White House anymore. He's decided to make toys, apparently.
Toys, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I assume the price is the same. It's Amazon Prime, and it's under $15. List price, I think, is $20. I believe Toys R Us also carries it. And basically, it's a stand, looks like a globe. You blow up a balloon, put it in the stand, and it's a toughened balloon. And then there are non-sticks.
Not that tough. Don't. It's a little tough.
It gives you enough time to play. So basically, the balloon is in the stand. There are 9 sticks aimed at the balloon. And as many people as you want can play it. You roll the die, and then the die tells you how many times you have to spin. That's how many pokes you have to take into the balloon.
So basically, think of the balloon as being in some sort of medieval torture device. And
yes,
you've got spikes going into it. They're not sharp. But
no,
but
no.
There's spikes going. And then you are now the role of the medieval torturer. You're slowly poking the balloon.
Yes, exactly. And it's kind of fun because it's tougher than a normal balloon.
Yeah, you can take quite a few pokes.
It can get very, and has a little face on it, and it gets very, very deformed. And yes, people toward the end go, oh, I don't want to be the
one. It's scary because you know it's going
to
pop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Although when I played it, we must have had a defective balloon because it just went.
Oh, that was the funniest thing I ever saw. That was Alex. Gentle. Who else could be gentle enough to pop a balloon that only let the air out of it? That was the funniest thing.
Slowly
it leaked.
Slowly.
And you get 10 balloons. You can buy more balloons. You can also just put in regular balloons. So it's Boom Boom Balloon, and it's Spin Master, and $20 or under.
We had a lot
Ooh,
of fun.
Ooh, there you go.
For that price, I don't know if maybe you got, okay, here's an example. My son, 18, freshman in college, he's come to that age where you get him useful stuff, socks, sweaters.
Yes, yes.
And he wanted a toy. So maybe if I go get him a Boom Boom Balloon, he'll forgive me for the socks, the sweaters, the books.
That could be. Maybe just put a piece of jewelry, not jewelry, but cufflinks or something, in the balloon so that when it breaks, there's a second reward.
There it goes. It's so pathetic. It was the most pathetic Boom Boom Balloon in history. You know what I did get him that I like, and I will be doing it a review of it at some point.
Yes.
It's from a company called Anki, A-N-K-I.
Yes.
Anki Drive. Time Magazine said it was one of the best inventions of 2013. We saw these at the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference, and they finally released it. It's a slot. Now, it's not cheap. It was very expensive. It's basically a slot car track that with these intelligent cars that you don't actually have slots. They just somehow know to stay inside the track. I guess they've got little cameras in them.
Oh, my word.
And then you control them with the iPhone. And then it's a game because the cars can have weaponized. They've been weaponized. So you have shields. You have weapons. You can shoot at the cars in front of you. You can change lanes. You can speed up. You can slow down. And it's all done via Bluetooth LE.
Wow.
It's actually...
What's it called? Freeway?
It's called Anki, A-N-K-I, Anki. Drive. Wow. D-R-I-V-E. And it's at anki.com. Now... pricey. As with any new technology, and I'm going to write this off on my taxes, it is not inexpensive. The cars themselves are $70. The starter kit, which includes the track and two cars, I think is $200 or $300. Yeah, $200.
Oh, my word.
So it's a two. It's
Isn't
expensive.
It cheaper to just wreck real cars?
Almost would be. Almost would be. But it is, and by the way, Henry played with it for about 5 minutes. So at $200 for 5 minutes.
He got bored after 5 minutes?
Yeah, he got. I think it was too hard. I don't know.
Oh, my word.
So I'm going to. Dad loves it. It's one of those Christmas gifts that Dad ends up taking over.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so, I think you're saying, Henry, I don't think you like this. Henry, I think you should go someplace.
He really. Yeah. You know what he wanted is an ATV. And I said, Henry, we got nowhere to drive. You know, one of those four-wheel all-terrain.
Yes, yes.
Where are you going to drive that? He said, well, I don't know. Up the hill? I don't know.
You know, you should have told him the name of that thing that you bought was called ATV Practice.
Maybe you'd have bought
you
that.
You get very, very good at this.
Yes. Then we'll talk. Dick, have a wonderful new year. I know you're going to tune
in. I'm going to see you on New Year's Eve.
Yes. You'll be joining us.
Final Gizwiz.
Are we going to put you on the double robotics camera so that you can roll around the studio?
Ooh, anything. I don't know.
Do that.
Yeah, we'll do something.
Yeah.
We'll do the regular Gizwiz, and you'll drop out at 5 o'clock and go to some country, right?
Every hour. We won't stop. I mean, we'll just keep going. We'll
say,
great. It's time for New Year's in America, Samoa, and let's go via Skype there where we're going to talk to Freddie. And Freddie, what's the scene
the
like?
Person.
Yeah, he's the guy in there, American Samoa.
He is Mr. American Samoa.
Yeah. And he's going to say, well, the party's just getting started. And here we are. It's midnight, 5, 4, 3, 2. And then the balloons will drop.
Great. That's great.
Then we have a little crank that we crank the balloons back up.
Oh, how great.
We got some fun things planned. I'm going to get a shave during it because it's 24 hours. And I don't want to have I don't want to get scratchy.
Wow.
So we've hired a barber to come in and shave me with a straight razor.
Wow.
I hope that's an actual barber and not just some guy with a straight razor.
A fan of the show who...
A fan will be stopping by.
A sicko fan of the show.
Magic show. I told you, Brian Brushwood's going to set things on fire.
Gosh.
We're going to be playing Dungeons and Dragons. I think I'll bring this Anki Drive. We'll play a little of that. It'll be fun. And, of course, the Gizwiz. That's twit.tv all day New Year's Eve from 4 a.m. Pacific on. Right up to 4 a.m. New Year's Day.
Excellent. No, it hasn't started yet. Leo, wake up. It hasn't started.
I'm so scared. Thank you, Dickie D. Everybody should go to his website, by the way, gizwiz.biz. Not only for notes about all the gadgets that he mentions all the time on our show and on other shows, ABC World News Now and so forth, but he also has some fun stuff on here. You can buy stuff. The Gizwiz garbage, he calls it. You still doing the eBay auction? Are you done with that now?
Yeah, no, I still have some books, hardcover books. Gizwiz auction. Yeah, you can check there.
It's all there. Gizwiz.biz. And of course, the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Thank you, Dickie D. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Thank you, Nathan Staten. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.